Hi, I'm Sydney Spencer.
And my name is Madison White. Welcome back to Waves and Wonders.
The podcast brought to you by the Central Coast State Parks Association, an environmental nonprofit that supports educational programs
and also promotes understanding and conservation of the natural and cultural resources of the state parks in San Luis Obispo County.
And with the help of CSPA, we're here to take a journey with you into the natural wonders of the Central Coast.
This episode, we'll be learning about rattlesnakes. Breeding season for rattlesnakes is in April and May, and they've been seen all over our state parks lately.
And we want to learn more about them. I was reading rattlesnakes are found all the way up from Mexico to Canada, and in California they're the most abundant, except for in places with lots of urbanization.
Yeah, I learned that male rattlesnakes court a female and mate from March to May. Then the pups are born between August and October and are taken care of by their mother.
They become less active through winter, which is known as brumation. They'll bury themselves into the ground and rest until the weather gets warmer. In the spring, they'll begin searching for food and become more social before their mating season.
Our first guest is John Sayers, an environmental scientist in Morro Bay.
We talked with him about his expertise with rattlesnakes throughout the state parks.
What have been your experiences with rattlesnakes in the state parks?
For me, I think the most amazing thing was learning that we had so many snakes here right on the immediate coast. First working here, I didn't believe it was true that we had so many rattlesnakes in Montana de Oro on the Bluff Trail. And then getting Emily Taylor from Cal Poly out to come and do some studies out there, we've learned a lot about the rattlesnakes. Our snakes tend to be really mellow. They like foggy, overcast days when it's about 55 degrees and no wind, and they'll just be laying in the bushes right on the side of the trail. People walk by them all day long and don't even see them. It's amazing to see the density of rattlesnakes we have in the park. It's one of our more common species seen out there, as opposed to Morro Bay, Estero, all the way up to San Simeon. There's another suite of snakes. But rattlesnakes in Montana de Oro, just it amazes me how many there are, and that's such a healthy population.
I wanted to ask, because you mentioned how like the state parks brought Emily Taylor out here to do some research with rattlesnakes. How has that like research and information helped you guys better learn to like manage, not necessarily manage them, but like deal with them within the state parks ecosystem?
I think just better understanding the subtle nuances of our coastal snakes. You know, it was always suspected that they were, you know, some people said lazier, you know, being on the coast. But, you know, the studies that they've done on rattlesnakes throughout the range around here have shown that our snakes are a little bit smaller, a little bit darker, a little bit slower, have a smaller home range. They have a smaller dietary requirement for the year. Everything's just a little bit smaller. Not necessarily that they're a subspecies or, you know, different. They're just slower. And, you know, it's the cool weather around here. They've just adapted to being in the cool weather. The dark skin is an adaptation to bring in more warmth.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's really cool. What would you recommend a hiker to do if they randomly ran into a rattlesnake on a trail here?
So our rattlesnakes tend to be fairly docile here on the coast. It depends on where in the park they ran into it. If the snake is out moving across the trail, it's best just to pause, back up a little bit, and let it go its way, let it cruise across. Sometimes a longer stick can encourage it to go around. If you can walk around it, that's always a good idea, just staying away from it, let it do its business. If they're coiled up on the side of the trail, if you can give it a little bit of room, move around. They're not apt to strike at you for no reason. They'll let you know if they're angry. They'll rattle, they'll get agitated, they'll try to move away. But yeah, best thing is just to give it a little distance.
Earlier you mentioned the gopher snake that you came across the other day, and I was wondering if you had any other stories like that about coming across rattlesnakes and having to move them or back away, anything like that.
So we do a lot of restoration projects in the park and a lot of volunteer events. For Earth Day, we have volunteers out from PG&E and from the community helping us pull weeds on the Bluff Trail, controlling New Zealand spinach. And moving rattlesnakes is one of the things we do out there. Almost every other project we do, some days, like some projects, we'll move two or three in a day. Other projects, we won't even see any. But yeah, that is one of the jobs I take on, is moving them out of harm's way. I say out of harm's way because I don't want people to get upset and strike out them with the tool. I want to move the snake somewhere safe and then make it safe for our volunteers to work.
Yeah, that's awesome. How do you go about moving them?
So I've got a pair of snake tongs that are about a 3 foot long grabber that puts me at a safe distance. I've also got a snake stick that has a small hook on the end that I can gently encourage them to move off the trail. If I need to move them a farther distance, we do have a bucket with a lid and sheets, and I can capture the snake, temporarily move it a safe distance away. We do that from the rangers will do that in the campgrounds. If we have snakes in the campsites, out in Montana de Oro, we'll move them farther away from the children, away from the pets.
Cool.
And why is it so important to move them away from people?
Just the interactions. You know, we don't want people getting upset that there's a, you know, dangerous snake in their campsite and trying to kill it. They are an important part of the ecosystem. We do want them to continue to play their role of controlling the rodents in the park. So we want to encourage the snakes to be here. We want to encourage people to get along with the snakes. But we know there's always that interaction where people are afraid of them. Kids will try to pick them up. Parents sometimes will pick them up. And, you know, the people that get bit are the ones picking the snakes up, generally. Mm-hmm. I just encourage people, like, to get out and, you know, wander around our parks. Our snakes tend to be coming out around 10 o'clock in the morning. So if you're out in the park walking, you know, that's about the time they start to wake up and start to sun and start to get warm. They really do like that 55-degree overcast, no-wind days, which are really common around here in the summer. And then as soon as it gets windy and cool, they go back underground or they go hide somewhere where they're off the trail. But I encourage you to get out there and see them and enjoy them from a distance and ask questions of the state park employees that are out there if you have any questions about the snakes.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We also spoke with Dr. Emily Taylor, who has been a professor in the Biological Sciences Department at Cal Poly for about 20 years.
Dr. Taylor found the Central Coast Snake Services in 2019. She also wrote a book on California snakes that came out in May of 2024. She's currently on a book tour.
During our conversation, we learned a lot about rattlesnakes in the ecosystem and how to protect ourselves and the snakes if we see them out. First of all, thank you so much for coming to talk to us today, Dr. Taylor, about rattlesnakes. We're very excited to have you.
So yeah, I guess we kind of just wanted you to get us started off by describing your work here at Cal Poly, even though you're not currently teaching, but like, and also in directing the physiological ecology of the reptile lab.
I started the physiological ecology of reptiles lab, like I said, almost 20 years ago now when I got here. And like all Cal Poly faculty, we do research with students. That's the focus of it. And students love wildlife. Students love getting their hands on, and they can get their hands on most wildlife, except for rattlesnakes, maybe not. But they actually are able to do quite a bit of work with them. So I've done research on everything ranging from rattlesnake physiology to human-wildlife conflict with rattlesnakes, which is something that's really important. So in addition to the research I do with my students here at Cal Poly, I also have a consulting company that I started 5 years ago. It's called Central Coast Snake Services. And it is to, again, reduce that human-wildlife conflict. And like we do things like most of it for free. We do things like if someone has a rattlesnake in their yard in all of SLO or Santa Barbara counties, we'll go and catch that snake and we'll relocate it out into the wild in a way that's been informed by science. Like you said a minute ago, it is rattlesnakes are coming out now, right? Yeah. We're here in mid-May. This is kind of peak season. The rattlesnakes are slithering around Poly Canyon. People are seeing them at the dorms. We're getting lots of calls about them.
Could we start with like the life cycle of rattlesnakes?
Absolutely. So rattlesnakes are born in the late summer, early fall. I'll tell you a little bit in a couple minutes about how they get made. They're born, they have live birth, and so the mothers will be pregnant all summer long, and they will give birth to those babies, and they actually take care of them. So it's really rare in reptiles to have that maternal care, but it's kind of adorable. You see these little cuddle puddles of rattlesnake mothers and their pups, which is the official name of baby rattlesnakes. And then in the fall, they kind of disperse. They go underground for the winter. You won't usually see them for most of the winter. And then they wake up the following spring. The babies will start eating lizards and start growing. The adults will eat mice and ground squirrels. And spring is the big time mating season for rattlesnakes. That's why we see lots of them moving around right now. Especially the bigger snakes, the ones that are maybe 3 feet long, those are the males. And they're looking for females right now. They're hopped up on testosterone. They have a mission. So they'll find those females, they'll mate this spring, and then the females will become pregnant. And they will gestate all summer long and then give birth to those baby rattlesnakes again. I will say that rattlesnakes can live for many decades, and including maybe even as much as 60 years or more. And they have really complex family lives and friends. They seem to hang out with certain individuals more than others. Like, there's a lot more to rattlesnakes than meets the eye. What you see on TV with, you know, them rattling and striking and acting terrifying, that's not how they actually are at all. You know, scary things get clicks and likes and watches and views. So unfortunately for them, you know, they get that kind of reputation, but they're really not like that.
When you talk about mating and all the males being hopped up on testosterone, do they have like a mating call? Like how birds like have a little call to like attract females. Like how do like male rattlesnakes and female rattlesnakes end up finding each other and like mating?
So the females, when they are fat enough to be able to make babies, they will have a pheromone that they leave a trail on the ground. And so they don't get fat. They're not fat enough every year, because when they drop the babies, when they have the babies in the fall, they lose like half their body weight. But if they finally gain the weight back and they're fat enough, then the males will be attracted to that smell of those pheromones. And then when they find them, they try to mate with the females, because the males are desperate to mate with the females. They almost never get to mate. And so they'll hang out with her, they'll court her, which is hilarious looking. They crawl under her back and they kind of do this like jerky movement with their chin, all like rubbing her back, almost like a little massage, but like jerking their head all over her back. And he'll stay with her, he'll defend her from other males. If other males come nearby, they'll fight, which does not involve biting. It involves like this really cool thing where they rear up and wrestle each other to the ground. And eventually, after a lot of wrestling, the bigger male usually wins access to the female. And the smaller male goes away and sulks in a hole for like 2 weeks. He won't come out.
Wow.
Anyway, so, and then finally, if she allows him to mate with her and lifts her tail, that's when the actual deed can occur.
Huh. Got it. Kind of like humans. Yeah. They like have complex emotions.
Say a lot of parallels.
There are definite parallels.
Awesome. Well, that was interesting. I guess, can you tell us a little bit about how their rattle works and like how they kind of make that rattling sound? I know it's kind of like a defense mechanism in a sense, but how does that exactly work?
Yeah, a lot of people have never really looked at a rattlesnake's rattle. They're usually running away when they see rattlesnakes. So it's actually really cool how it works. You know, all snakes, if they get stressed out, will shake their tail and make a noise in the brush. But rattlesnakes have evolved this, you know, in a way it's kind of like a maraca. It makes noise on the end of it. And as you said, it's used for defense. It's used to warn away a predator, saying, back off, I don't want to bite you. I want to save my venom for the mice that I want to eat.
Yeah.
But it's actually not like a maraca in the sense that it's not filled with something. What it is that each segment on a rattlesnake's rattle, which they make one segment every time they shed, fits loosely within the one next to it. It's all made of keratin, the same thing as your fingernails. So when they shake their tail, and they have these specialized muscles in their tails that contract really fast, then each of those segments kind of bangs against each of the one next to it and makes this zzzz noise. So if a rattlesnake has a tail injury and there's no rattle on it, it can't make a noise. It still shakes its little tail because it's instinctive, but it doesn't make a noise. That's rare. Most rattlesnakes have rattles.
So then does their rattle get bigger as they grow more and shed more?
Yes. So rattlesnakes are born with a little button the babies have, and they can't make any noise. And then after they've shed a couple times, there's now additional rattles. So the rattle segment closest to the body is the newest one that they just made.
Okay.
And so as they grow, as they shed, they'll have more and more rattles. However, it is not true that you can tell the age of a rattlesnake based on the number of rattles, because just like our fingernails break off because they're made of keratin, which is, you know, pliable, so does the rattlesnake's rattle.
That makes sense.
If a rattlesnake were to like lose its rattle, could it ever grow another rattle back, or is it like completely rattleless?
So if a rattlesnake's, you know, normal rattle just breaks off, then yeah, as soon as it sheds a couple times, it'll have a new rattle. But there's occasionally, very rarely, there'll be a rattlesnake that maybe it got run over on just its tail when it was little, and so there's a deformity there and it can't make a rattle. In that case, those rattlesnakes never have rattles.
Now we could move in maybe to their place in the ecosystem and how they benefit the ecosystem here.
Absolutely. So rattlesnakes are what we call a mesopredator, meaning that they both eat things like rodents, but then they're also eaten by top predators like hawks and owls and coyotes, etc. So mesopredators really play a doubly important role in the ecosystem in the sense of maintaining the structure of that food web. by helping control rodent populations. They're preventing a overpopulation of rodents that would cause all of our plants and crops to be just eaten to pieces. They also control the rodent populations that carry certain diseases. Another role they play in the ecosystem that's really, like, fun and cool fact is that they're seed dispersers, which sounds weird. But if a kangaroo rat or a pocket mouse eats seeds, it puts them in its little cheeks, and then eventually it swallows them, and it's, as an herbivore, its gut is going to destroy those seeds, right? It gets the nutrients out of them. But if a rattlesnake eats that rodent, then it basically rescues those seeds, because as a carnivore, its gut will not digest the seeds. So the seeds pass through the rattlesnake's gut, and it poops the seeds out in a little pile of fertilizer, you know, what's remaining of the rat.
Wow.
And so in that way, they help to disperse seeds. And so everything I've said so far is true, really, of all big snakes that could eat rodents, not just rattlesnakes. One of the other really important things that rattlesnakes do for people, which isn't really its role in the ecosystem, but it is something that it does for us, is that their venom is being used now to make drugs. So there's, for example, there's a drug that's been on the market for, since 1998 now, that is used to treat people who are at risk of blood clots. Those are being used now to help people who are getting stents put in their hearts, et cetera. And then there's a bunch of other trials right now for venom-based drugs that are going to potentially help with cancer treatment, et cetera. So lots of things that rattlesnakes do for us.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's really cool. I actually didn't know that. I've heard about, like, research, not specifically with rattlesnakes, but, like, taking venom out of, like, lizards or other, like, animals and using it to develop, like, research for medicine within humans. So that's really cool. I didn't know that about rattlesnakes. Can you tell us a little bit why they live here and choose to habitate the Central Coast?
Yeah, I sure can. The western rattlesnake, which is the one species that lives here, is a habitat generalist in California. It lives basically from, you know, northern Mexico all up coastal California and then throughout the Central Valley and all throughout all of northern California all the way up to Canada. Like, this is a common snake. There's tons of these rattlesnakes everywhere. And you have to actually go down to the deserts to get additional species of rattlesnakes. And so rattlesnakes are everywhere in California. They occupy every inch of California except for maybe some dense urban areas. And maybe not the very top of the Sierra Nevada, but they can get up to like 11,000 feet up there too. So they go pretty far up there. Rattlesnakes are anywhere where there is habitat available to them and mice for them to eat. They're just as Californian as wildlife comes. They are a part of our landscape. A lot of people who spend a lot of time outside just don't know the snakes are there because rattlesnakes hide from them. Rattlesnakes don't want to tangle with us. You probably walk by a bunch of rattlesnakes on your hikes and just don't even know it. The rattlesnakes in people's yards are going to be in areas where they're like at the edge of open space. So for example, obviously Polycanyon, we get rattlesnakes coming into the behind the dorms here on Cal Poly campus, even High School Hill here in San Luis Obispo. That's a big rattlesnake hotspot. Otherwise, they just don't want to venture into neighborhoods. They just don't really like people, and I can't blame them.
So they can live in temperatures obviously ranging a great deal if they're here and also in Central Valley and everywhere else.
Yeah, they really can. They're really good at thermoregulating. So people think rattlesnakes like really hot weather and they like it warm, but not really hot. They actually can't stand really hot weather. Like if they're out sitting out in the sun, they would overheat. So rattlesnakes are good at like finding shady spots and hanging out. And then if it gets too cold or too hot, they'll go underground and they'll just sit and wait.
So you say they hibernate. So when they're underground, they're not like sleeping for months on end, but their bodies just kind of like shut off, like how bears kind of are within hibernation?
Yes, you know, it's so complicated. When you actually get into the physiology of hibernation, it gets really fascinating. Rattlesnakes as what we call ectotherms, which are animals that get all of their body heat from external sources. They cannot make their own heat metabolically. They just shut off. They go down under the snow, not like sitting under the snow, but down in burrows deep below the frost line. They maintain their body temperature at just above freezing by picking the right spot, and they just sit there with their blood moving very slowly. Maybe their heart beats once every few minutes. So they're alive, but they're just barely using any energy. They're kind of in a diapause, waiting until spring comes.
Interesting. And how do they wake themselves like out of that? Like what triggers that? Is it like a change of temperature?
Believe it or not, no one really knows for sure. We're pretty sure it's temperature because we observe that when the temperature increases, that's when the snakes come out.
The Central Coast Snake Services, how did that start? What made you want to pursue that?
I started Central Coast Snake Services at first because I was doing snake safety training for companies. So, for example, biologists all around the state, you know, they're out there on construction sites, and if somebody digs up a rattlesnake, the biologist's job is to go and catch the snake and, you know, rescue the snake or rescue the construction workers, depending on whose point of view it is. And they have to safely relocate it. And so I was doing these trainings to teach people how to do that safely. And I decided to start a company, sort of just kind of keep the finances that I earned from that separate from the rest of my life. And then the pandemic hit right about three or four months after I started the company. And everybody was in their yards, hanging out, seeing there were snakes in their yards. And so they were started calling me saying, can you come get the snake? So we started to do that and realized that that was really important. So in addition to the services that we do where we charge money, things like the snake safety training, we do a lot of free services that we pay for using the money that we charge for the other ones. Because I have another job here at Cal Poly. I don't need to make money off of this. I'm trying to help people. So we just try to break even, where we rescue rattlesnakes from people's yards. We do things like yard inspections. I do things like host dog trainers who train dogs to stay away from rattlesnakes. Everything you can think of that is rattlesnake related. And it's been growing every single year. This last year, we expanded to cover Santa Barbara County as well. So we have this network of people who are on call to go deal with rattlesnake-related issues.
And how do you go about catching them?
So we have these grabbers. They're called tongs, and they're about 3 feet long. And you grasp the snake gently by mid-body, and you pick it up, and you put it in a bucket. And it has a screw top on it so that the snake can't pop the top of the bucket out with its head, because that happened to me once with a snap-top bucket when I was in grad school in my car going down the freeway. It wasn't good. Anyway, so we have the screw top bucket, and we take it and then we release it. And really importantly, we follow the best science, much of which was actually, you know, done in our laboratory here to see what happens to snakes when we relocate them. And the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has recommendations about how far you should take snakes away and what you should do with them. So we follow all of those things. We have mitigation measures to prevent transfer of snake fungal disease, because if you have a snake that has this fungus in their skin, which is an emerging pathogen, and it's in the bucket, then it can be transmitted to the next snake unless you clean the bucket. So we really pride ourselves on doing everything according to, you know, regulations and standards and the best science. And it's good for the snake, and it's also good for the people who get free snake removal from their yard.
Yeah. I didn't know there was so much that went into snake removals. I get the videos on, like, my Instagram For You page of, like, guys going into people's backyards and removing rattlesnakes, and I was like, that kind of looks fun.
I think it's great fun.
Yeah, I bet you do. But I guess kind of what I wanted to ask, and it's very obvious based on talking to you, you have a very deep love for rattlesnakes and snakes in general, and we kind of just were curious, like, where did that come from? Where did that start, and, like, what made you want to work with reptiles specifically and study rattlesnakes so closely?
The reason for that has changed over the years. So I fell in love with rattlesnakes when I was about y'all's age, in my very early 20s. And I think then it was because I took a class and got to see them in the wild and was just really fascinated by them. Back then, there was also a little bit of a, you know, egotistical, hot-headed danger thing going on where there weren't very many female rattlesnake biologists. And I was kind of a tomboy. I was one of the boys. And I was like, I want to be that person who does this. That would be cool. And there's a lot of other reasons why I thought they were so fascinating. And then as I became a scientist, I realized what great study animals they were and how cool they were to study in the field. But I feel I have a lot of, you know, emotions for them, in the sense that I get really angry about animals that are persecuted for no reason. And these are like the ultimate maligned animal. And I want to help the wildlife that really can't speak up for themselves by providing a voice for them. It's something that helps. And the nice thing about doing that is that it's helping the snakes, but it's also helps the people and their pets. Like, there's no trade-off there. What's good for the snakes, which is relocation, is also good for the people. Killing rattlesnakes, which is what people had to do before, is dangerous. People get bit by killing rattlesnakes all the time.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I was reading your blog, actually, talking about just this perception that the public has towards rattlesnakes and really kind of misguided, you know. So could you elaborate a little bit on how we are taught to think about rattlesnakes versus how we should be doing that in reality?
I'm glad you said how we are taught to think about rattlesnakes, because it is true that it's how we're taught. It's all culturally transmitted. Either it's your parents or another family member talking about how, ooh, they're gross or they're dangerous or something like that. The fear connection is more easily made if it's paired with a negative experience, including people saying, oh God, gross, or seeing bad things. So if people instead, including kids, if they see positive portrayals of snakes, if they have positive interactions with snakes when they're young, they're more likely to form a positive opinion about them. That doesn't mean, by the way, that we're like going out trying to tell kids to approach rattlesnakes. It's all about safety. It's about saying, oh, if you see a rattlesnake, back away, go tell your parents. But promoting that appreciation for them, because we think that just like there's that predisposition for humans as primates to notice a snake, and like, you might really easily form that fear bond, you can really easily also form that admiration bond, and that can extend to other wildlife.
Yeah, that's I agree. I've never had a negative experience with one. I've only seen one once. I was in MDO, and yeah, just exactly like you said, slithered away, and that was it.
And it was cool, right? If you had a chance to get photos or something to share with people. Like I say, I was like, normalize seeing rattlesnakes in the wild, right? We're in their home, especially at MDO. Oh my gosh, there's so many there. And take photos and share with them instead of running screaming the other way. Or
yeah, I would agree. The only interaction I've had with a rattlesnake, I was spray painting at Architecture Graveyard in the middle of the night one time, and I stepped a little too close to one, and it hissed at me. It made its presence known, and I jumped back, and I was startled at first because I wasn't expecting it. But I thought it was cool nonetheless, and I like went a different direction because I was like, you know what? You can have this building. I don't need to be here.
That's awesome. What a great experience. And that's exactly how it's meant to go.
Yeah.
The rattlesnake is being very friendly to warn people off. And then we go our separate ways and we're both happy.
Yeah, I like how you say that, friendly, rather than it being like a threat, kind of. It's more of just a warning sign. Like,
it is a warning. And I actually have another kind of way of thinking about it for you that was very formative for me. There was a friend of mine who reported about a student at one of their events, a little kid, that watched a rattlesnake rattling and very sagely said, that rattlesnake's rattle isn't one of ferociousness, it's the rattlesnake screaming. Which I thought was really interesting. It's like that rattlesnake is terrified.
Mm.
And so the rattling is it being like, I'm scared of you, not threatening whatsoever. Because rattlesnakes would rather do just about anything than bite a person or a dog or something, anything else they can't eat.
That's really great to know, actually. It kind of changed my way of looking at it, too.
Because
it's
sure.
Like they're a lot smaller than us, and we could do a lot more harm to them than they can necessarily do to us, I would say. I mean, with that in mind, though, you have to be careful because they are venomous, right? It's venomous,
yes.
Not poisonous.
That's right. So they are venomous snakes. So through all of this, with me talking about how amazing rattlesnakes are, I'm absolutely not trying to minimize the risk that they pose. Negative interactions with rattlesnakes are very serious. Rattlesnake bites are a major medical issue. So it's all about prevention, which is why I do snake safety and why I do these outreach events, things like this, because knowledge is power. You know, knowing a little bit more about what rattlesnakes do can help you be safe. But basically, if people just wear proper footwear and watch where they're stepping, and don't put their hands and feet where they can't see them, then they're not going to get bit by a rattlesnake.
With that kind of being said, if someone does happen to accidentally find themselves in a situation where they've been bitten by a rattlesnake, what is the proper precautions to be taking afterwards?
If someone is bitten by a rattlesnake, there's only two things they should do. They should, first of all, take off any jewelry on the limb, for like rings, because the limb will swell and you don't want to have a situation where you have a ring constricting your finger when it's swollen. And then call 911 to seek medical attention, because it's going to be treated with antivenom at a hospital, including the hospitals around here. They all have it. And there's nothing else that you should do. So anything you've ever heard about or seen on TV, not true. No tourniquets, no cutting and sucking, no ice, no heat, no nothing. Just go to the doctor. And the same, by the way, applies for the much more likely event that a dog gets bitten, is an emergency veterinarian and antivenom only. Antivenom and pain meds for both people and pets. That's the only thing that works. Nothing else.
What's your favorite part of your work and your research?
Well, the first one that comes to mind, of course, is the students. Like, every year I get older, but I'm surrounded by young people. They don't get older because it's new ones every time. Being around young people is like the fountain of youth. It really keeps me happy and energized, and it's actually kind of hard to express or to understand why I like being around college students so much, but I'm sure that most of the faculty at Cal Poly would relate. Another part is that after spending so much time working with rattlesnakes, I have enough street cred that I can make an impact, that I can have an impact. Do y'all know what I mean? Like, when you start something, everyone's like, whatever, you're just some baby researcher and they don't pay attention to you.
Yeah, totally.
But after a while, just out of time and just sheer, you know, stubbornness and persistence, eventually you build up a record of just, again, stubbornness and persistence. And people listen. And so I get consulted on things that are important, decisions being made by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. I just wrote a book that came out a week ago about California snakes. And I never could do that if I didn't have those street creds. And that book is now going to be, you know, used by a lot of people to learn about California snakes. So just, I guess, the idea of having influence is a really powerful thing. I think most people want that, no matter what their chosen career path is. It's not like being a power tripper. It's just like a feeling like you're doing something that's actually important.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
For sure.
Will you tell us more about your book?
Sure. It just came out exactly a week ago. I'm very excited about it. It's called California Snakes and How to Find Them. It's a small book. It's 5x7. It's full of beautiful photographs of California snakes. And as you might guess by the Potter-esque title, it's very much about the fact that snakes are the most fantastic beasts of them all and how we can go find them. So it's about field herping, which is like looking for amphibians and reptiles in the field, how each snake can best be found, and just... It's almost like a field guide, but it's not technical. It's a field guide that has just more general descriptions of the snakes and then really fun stories about them.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. I definitely sound interested in it. It seems like a great way to get into, like, beginner herpetology, I guess, for anyone interested in that kind of lifestyle. Or not lifestyle, but hobby.
Yeah, I guess it's a lifestyle. It can be.
It definitely is.
It depends on how seriously you take it and how much you go herping. No, it is. It's really aimed at the beginning herper, people who are interested in learning how to go look for snakes in the wild, or people who are visiting our state and want to learn how to target individual species.
And just if someone might not know, will you explain what a herper is?
Yes. So a herper is someone who likes to go out looking for amphibians and reptiles, which are herps, and that is based on herpetology, the study of amphibians and reptiles.
A question I'm kind of curious about, and maybe some of our listeners might be too, and I know you wouldn't necessarily do this with rattlesnakes, but you can do this with other reptiles and snakes. How would you go about handling them if you see them out in the wild and you're curious to pick them up and take a closer look? Would you recommend that?
Sure thing. So I talk about this in the book a lot, specifically with respect to snakes, about how part of the reason that people are attracted to snakes, including me, is because you can get them in your hands. And unlike a bird that you watch and it flies away, you can actually hold this snake and you can really feel its smooth scales and see its face up close. And that's just an attractive thing for people. I also in the book talk about how you shouldn't always do that because you might miss out. I have lots of stories about snake watching and things that I would have missed if I had picked up the snake, so including like the gopher snake that I got to see raid a great horned owl's nest and eat the babies because I didn't pick it up. Really cool stuff. Anyway, you also have to worry about stressing out the snake. So if people do pick up snakes, which they can pick up any snake in California that's not a rattlesnake, they're all totally harmless, and you can just hold them and look at them, holding them by two hands. Just don't hold them for too long because you don't want to stress them out for too long and let them go. Some snakes might still try to bite. But if they bite, nothing terrible can happen. So a big gopher snake that you might find in Poly Canyon, if it does bite, it's like little pinpricks to your arm. It's not really anything.
Where could people buy your book?
The book is available anywhere books are sold, including like online on Amazon.com. And it just got picked up by REIs in California, which
wow.
I'm so excited about. And on my website, CentralCoastSnakeServices.com, if people want a signed copy of it.
Perfect.
Congratulations again on writing that. It sounds quite an achievement.
It was so fun to be able to write about all my stories that I've about snakes and have people want to read about them. And, you know, I'm not a photographer, so my friends all allowed me to use their photos. And these are amazing photographers, so that really made the book. Since then, I've written book two on lizards. It comes out next year.
Wow.
So,
sweet.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
Do you have anything else you want to add?
I do have one tip for you all, which is really cool. It's very exciting. We have a research project and community science project called Project Rattlecam, where people can watch rattlesnakes live on a live stream. Like, you know how they have peregrine falcon nest cams and things like that? Well, we have a rattlesnake live stream, and it just went live today.
Oh.
So 24/7, people can go on to rattlecam.org, and they can watch rattlesnakes live. Rattlesnakes are most likely to be out in the middle of the day, so if they look in the middle of the night, they're probably not going to be out, but it's just such an exciting thing. And it's not even just a static camera. It's live streamed to YouTube, and so people can ask questions, me and my grad students will answer, and we can pan and tilt and zoom the camera remotely. So if someone says, zoom in on that snake over there. We can do it. So it makes it feel like they're there.
Yeah, that's and very exciting.
They get to see the rattlesnakes acting like they actually do, not defensively like they are shown on TV.
Yeah.
We've had that camera going for 3 years in California, and the thing that's different about this one that we just started is it's in Colorado at this mega den with hundreds of snakes. So this is like way more action. Huh. People should check it out. It's so cool.
I'm definitely interested.
I definitely will.
Yes.
Yeah. Already have it pulled up here. Ready to go.
That's it. Thank you for speaking with us today, Dr. Taylor. We really appreciated our conversation. And we learned a lot about rattlesnakes, to say the least.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure getting to know you and learning about rattlesnakes and hearing about your journey into them and taking us on a journey with you. It's been fun.
You are absolutely most welcome, both of you. Thanks for inviting me.
As we learned, Dr. Taylor's book is now available to buy. It's a great resource for beginning herpers in California.
In addition, State Parks Week is coming up. The tagline this year is, "This is where you live." It goes from June 12th to the 16th, so don't miss out.
Each day has a different theme, like exploring new experiences, supporting climate resilience, celebrating community and culture, and more.
Visit the link in our description for more information on this event going on during our State Parks Week. That's all we have for today's episode of Waves and Wonders.
We're an environmental podcast exploring the wonders of San Luis Obispo, brought to you by the Central Coast State Parks Association.
And we thank you for joining us today on our exploration of rattlesnakes. I'm Sydney.
And I'm Madison. Stay tuned for more information about State Parks Week. Until then, keep exploring.